Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. Tonight, we explore the heart of one of our core mysteries on Coast, UFOs. I get asked about the subject a lot, as you might imagine. People want to know why a journalist would put his professional reputation and credibility, such as it is, on the line by delving into such a wacky, presumably unproven, maybe unprovable subject. And whenever people ask me about my own interest in the subject, I tell them how I got hooked, why I believe there's something to it. And I say it's the paper trail. There's no way for a journalist to go out and observe UFOs. I mean, I've certainly tried over the years, but it's hit or miss at best. We can't predict when or where they will appear, but there is something that journalists can dig into, can wrap their heads around, can pursue with as much vigor as they can muster, and that's the paper trail. And I'm talking about the official documents, reports, memos, analyses, sighting incidents, once classified pieces of paper written by and for our military and intelligence muckety-mucks, top generals and admirals, CIA directors, FBI honchos, insiders. And the documents which are of the greatest interest to me are those that were written long before any Freedom of Information Act existed or was even imagined. Back when these pieces of paper were generated, the insiders who wrote them figured the public would never get to see their words. So they were far more candid than they are today. And some of those documents are flat out astounding. Those of you who are hoping and wishing for a day when there's some sort of gigantic, dramatic disclosure about UFOs, I think are going to be sorely disappointed, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. But the fact is, nearly everything that we might hope for in a disclosure statement can already be found if you look for it in the papers that were squeezed reluctantly out of our government via FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. Tonight, one of the early pioneers in the use of FOIA to obtain UFO secrets will be here to give us a guided tour of the paper trail. If you've been looking for definitive UFO evidence, well, here it is. Dr. Bruce McAbee spent 36 years working as a physicist for the U.S. Navy and is regarded as one of the world's best analysts of UFO photos and videos. But his most important contribution, in my view, is the work he did to painstakingly coax out of the government some of the documents we're going to discuss tonight. It's extremely hard for insiders to try and dismiss or minimize their own words or to argue that they didn't really mean what they said, which is why I think this evidence is perhaps the most persuasive UFO evidence of all. So coming up in hour two, Dr. Bruce McAbee takes us inside the real X-Files. And yes, that's what some of them were really called. But first, one of the freshest new voices in UFO writing. There aren't many mainstream journalists who cover this subject on a regular, ongoing basis. In fact, Billy Cox calls his blog Devoid, the mainstream media's lonely UFO weblog. And it is lonely for him, I'd imagine, but it's good stuff. He writes for a newspaper in Florida, somehow got hooked on the UFO subject, and has emerged as one of the keenest observers of the UFO scene. I wanted to have him on the show for a long time. He makes his Coast debut coming up in just a couple of minutes. One other note about UFO disclosure, as we segue into our news segment here, there's a lot of misinformation floating around out there about the citizens' hearing on disclosure. You remember the hearings that were held last year. Dozens of UFO witnesses, many of them regulars on Coast to Coast, appeared before a panel of former members of Congress, and they made the case for UFO reality, why it should be taken seriously. I've been seeing bits and pieces online and emails about when the film version of those hearings is going to be sent to current members of Congress and then be available to the public, but not sure why bad information, misinformation is being spread, but the dates being bandied about are wrong. according to the guys who are doing the actual work editing the films. The final products, I guess, are close, but not quite there. And these guys who are working on it worry that maybe someone's trying to poison the well, so to speak, before they can put their stuff out. One of those filmmakers is a guy named Jeremy Corbell. I've mentioned his name on the program before, and he is going to be my guest coming up sometime in the next couple of months to talk about this project and a couple other things he's working on. But if you want to keep up with the real scoop on that citizens hearing thing, there is a link you can trust to be accurate. It's citizenhearing.org. I think we'll probably post that on the website, www.citizenhearing.org, and we will get into further details about it once the release date is imminent. Tonight, it was supposed to be a cosmic war of the worlds of sorts, Mars versus its arch-rival Antares in the night sky. If you want to know what I mean, take a look at the NAPS news section on the Coast website. A webmaster Lex and I have put together our usual assortment of oddities and items of interest from recent news reports. The rise of the machines, how far away might that be, and what will it mean once super intelligent machines are up and running? Might be bad for us. We got a piece about it. Check out the think piece we found about what could be done with weaponized Ebola, or as some people suspect, is it already a weapon of some sort? A crazy idea to use nearly 24 atomic bombs to clear the way for a road project. It really was considered for a while by government officials. No surprise there. We've got the story and more under NAPS News when you get a moment. So, folks, slip into those jammies, put on those bunny slippers, fire up the coffee pot, and let's get ready to rumble. Time now to take our first break. When we return, the Coast debut of newspaper man Billy Cox and his original take on the UFO topic. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Billy Cox is a journalist for the Herald Tribune in Sarasota, Florida, and he writes about UFOs in the Devoid blog, the mainstream media's lonely UFO weblog. Billy, great to have you on the show.
George, I'm flattered to be here. I appreciate your inviting me.
I've been writing your, reading your stuff, and I've been a fan for several years now, so it's long overdue. I remember the sort of the phrase or the column that really hooked me and convinced me that I needed to get you on the show. It's when you wrote about a news conference, a UFO news conference. The title of the article or the piece was On Breaching Etiquette, and you talked about, quote, when it comes to UFOs, every professional journalistic instinct is shaped by cultural forces and skewed towards self-policing. No one wants to be alone on the limb, especially in a media group setting where you could be 100% assured nobody will get your back with a follow-up. Man, is that true. Tell me this. How is it that you got hooked on it, and how is it you've been able to write about it without ticking off your boss?
Well, I actually think it might have cost me a job at another Florida newspaper. I was in a job hunt longer than that, 6 years ago or so. And I mentioned to an executive editor of a paper I was applying to, among other things, I'm a feature writer, but I also said, you know, I'm also interested in UFOs. Would that be a problem? And he just kind of laughed it off, you know, and I never heard back from him again. Imagine that. But I got interested in this back in 1979. I actually saw one. I was over on the east coast of Florida. It was late back then. I used to work sports, which meant I was a bit of a night owl, and I was in Cocoa Beach. I had a buddy and an old girlfriend of mine, and we were walking on the beach around 12:30 heading north, where you could see the gantries from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, Kennedy Space Center. Yep. And off to the east, the reason we were there was this heat lightning. It was a new moon. I mean, it was really pretty way off to the east, and you could see, you know, the strobing clouds and all that. But anyway, it was a new moon. There was a real thin gossamer haze, so you could see the stars, but not very clearly. And all of a sudden, I don't know if this has happened to you, but I saw something out of the corner of my eye, maybe 45, 50 degrees at an angle off to the east, and I grabbed my girlfriend's arm, and I swung around, and my buddy turned around too, and I pointed, and I said, look. And it was an object. I have no idea what it was. It was darker than the rest of the sky. It was mass, because as it moved, you could not see the stars through. It wasn't translucent. There were three red non-oscillating lights in a triangular array, and it made a real fine, subtle tune, like a tuning fork against glass, kind of a hum. And I watched this thing. It looked like it had detached itself from the sky and just kind of, there was almost an organic quality to it. It seemed to flow like liquid to the north. And my buddy Steve went running after it. I started to run after it too. And my girlfriend grabbed my arm. She said no. And I shook her off, basically let go. Anyway, Steve's running, I'm chasing Steve, Terry's chasing me, and suddenly, maybe duration 10 seconds max, no more than that, and all of a sudden it just sort of dissipated, took a bit of a tilt, and then it just dissipated like it had never happened. And of course, you know, what do you do when you see something like that? I didn't call anybody, I didn't know what to do. But it's one of those really weird things, George, where it takes up a disproportionate amount of space the farther away you get from it. It gets bigger and bigger in the rear view. It's like you've just gone down the rabbit hole. And I just want to know what it was. And that kind of started me on my way. And so anyway, I haven't gotten any smarter about it. And all these years later, I'm no closer to where I was, you know, back in 1979. So I feel like I'm on a fool's errand.
Well, join the crowd, because I've been at it for a while myself, and I don't think anybody knows any of the answers to the big questions, who or what it is, where they're from, what they want. But it sure is fun chasing it, isn't it?
It is, but then it's also very frustrating. You know, I've read some of the things that you've written, too, about people coming at you who really haven't done any research, and they make their own sort of negative proclamations. And that to me is the thing that makes me question my sanity. You know, why am I doing this? I'm not going to get to the bottom of this. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm on to something, just as you do, but I don't feel like I'm getting any closer to it, and that's frustrating.
Well, at a minimum, you can hold people's feet to the fire, government people and military people who presumably know more than you do, and you do that. I mean, I think you really do. You've really held some folks accountable with piercing verbiage, I think. We'll share some of that.
I don't think they care. I'm not even sure the people read it. I mean, the people I might be targeting some of these queries at, their best move is to do nothing, and they have done nothing. I can't tell that I've budged the bar one nanometer higher. You know, I mean, they basically ignore you. That's assuming they're even reading you in the first place. Now, that's what I have tried to do for the last 7 years with this blog, by kind of, I'm guessing your goal as well, is to make it okay for the media to talk about this stuff. Not that we're going to get any answers, but, you know, why this taboo? Why should you have to guard what you're really most interested in? You really got to watch your comments, and you know, especially with fellow journalists. I mean, that they don't call it a taboo for nothing. Do you ever bring this up? Do you ever talk unsolicited, George, about this with your journalistic? Obviously, out there in Las Vegas, people know what you do, but I mean.
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't bring it up in journalism settings unless somebody asks me about it. But I have spoken when I'm in UFO settings. I'll talk about the journalistic response, because people, as you have written, they think there is a giant cone of silence that's imposed on us, which is why, you know, mainstream media don't cover it, and that's just not the case. I mean, you would agree with that?
It's not the case.
No,
absolutely not the case. It's cultural. It's not managerial. You know that.
Well, that's the criticism I've had of the profession, is that more than anyone, journalists are willing to dismiss it without doing any work at all, even more so than scientists, I think. And it sort of plays into the hands of those who don't want it to be taken seriously to begin with, meaning the keepers of the secrets. And it just amazes me that on any other subject, you'd want to do your homework. You know, you'd want to do some reading about it, interview some witnesses, do some legwork. And then this one is the one that you can go ahead and dismiss it and make jokes about it and compare it to Elvis and Bigfoot and things like that. And make fun of somebody's beanies or the tinfoil hat and get away with it.
And it really doesn't matter which side of the spectrum you're on it journalistically, whether you're with Fox or whether you're with the New York Times. It's really sort of an equal opportunity stigma. I mean, I went back over some of the things I've written over the years, and I was, gosh, here's Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times. He says, there's this embarrassing fact about the United States in the 21st century. Americans are as likely to believe in flying saucers as in evolution. No, in creationism. Like, are you serious? Eric Alderman of The Nation. Vastly more Americans believe in flying saucers and 9/11 conspiracy theories than believe in the notion of balance, much less objective, in the mainstream news media. Wow, okay. And then you have this guy, Greg Gutfeld for Fox, and he says, see, I've always felt that people into UFOs are loony and that normal life is so complicated, they cling to conspiracies for intellectual comfort. I like the UFO obsession because it points out a peculiar aspect of progressivism. That is, if you believe in progressive ideas, you'll believe in anything, including alien conspiracies. So, you know, I mean, it offends everybody, you know, and you can't get around that. And people's brains, people I like, people whose work I respect, seem to just shut off, you know, at doing what you were talking about, the basic homework, you know, following up.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just... Like, for instance, Wade Goodwin, who works for, do you know Wade, Texas Public Radio?
No.
You hear his reports on NPR every now and then. When Stephenville happened, which I think was a real sea change of a moment because we got such good radar data out of that, or MUFON did, rather. So they corroborated eyewitness reports. They made the... Air Force reverse itself, that it didn't have any, you know, planes up there that night. You know, they had 10. They had 10 F-16s after initially said they didn't have anything up there at all. So everybody descended on this little, as you know, cow town in the middle of Texas. Even crews from Japan came over. So this was something they couldn't really ignore. Nobody could, especially Texas media. And Wade Goodwin was there on the scene. He did an incredible job on the front end, interviewing witnesses and all that, and I listened to it a couple of times, and he played it straight. I mean, he did not offer any judge. He treated it like any other story, which I thought, yeah, okay. So then, of course, 6 months later, the MUFON report comes out with all the data, the radar data, when they've got it all mapped out, and they sort of put the lie to everything the Air Force had initially said. I mean, they showed where the planes were coming from, and they verified the witnesses' trajectory. One guy, I think it was Mr. Allen, said it looked like it was going down towards George Bush's ranch in that direction. Well, sure enough, there it was, plotted out right there at the edge of the no-fly zone. I mean, it was an amazing story. So on one of the anniversaries of, I think it was, oh, gosh, it must have been 2010, I contacted Wade Goodwin, and I said, so did you ever follow up on the actual MUFON report, the data, the radar data? He said, well, this is the first I've heard about it. I said, okay, let me send you a link to it. Never heard back from the guy. I mean, you know, I'm assuming he got it, but he was proud of his reporting on the front end, but the follow-up, it wasn't there.
Well, I've seen that. I've seen that on occasion too. Somebody will be willing to ask a question about it when it's just a story. When it sinks in that it might be actually real, it's a lot to get your head around. You know, we're talking with Billy Cox of the Devoid blog and the Herald Tribune, a newspaper man who's had the guts to cover the UFO topic for a number of years now. When we come back, we'll jump into some of the columns and some of the stories he's covered. Figured he might need to hear some Gulf of Mexico music in recognition of our Floridian guest, and also for all the parrot heads out there, Jimmy Buffett takes us into the break. She Bop, that's a song that's not about dancing. 1984 hit for Cyndi Lauper, who's having a major resurgence because of the success of her Broadway play Kinky Boots, which is playing all over the country now. It's on tour. We're talking with Billy Cox, a newspaper man who's had the guts to take on the UFO topic. Some of his subjects, some of his writing is pretty inside baseball. You have to have sort of at least a BA in ufology if you're going to understand it. We'll get into that and more and some of the cases he's covered right after this on Coast to Coast. Chatting with Billy Cox, newspaper man who covers UFOs. So tell me this, you write the blog about UFOs, you write features for the newspaper. Do ever the twain meet? I mean, do you write UFO stuff for the paper ever, or is that sort of off limits?
You know, it's never really been brought up. When I first got permission to do this 7 years ago, we had a different management team there. But the idea was, well, I think it was sort of tacitly, well, let Billy just go play around in his little UFO sandbox if he wants to. And I actually had, the idea is if I do something for print on UFOs, it's got to be local. There's got to be a Sarasota peg. And I actually do have several local pegs, but I haven't gotten really comfortable with the idea that I've got something strong enough in terms of really finely honed local interest. So, you know, it's not written in stone. That's just my feeling. If I'm going to do something for print on UFOs, I want it to be big, and I haven't really gotten there yet.
Similar for me. I mean, we got into it because we're able to report on Area 51 and the stories about things that go on out there. But unless that's a local sighting or something like that, there's not much interest in me reporting about national-type UFO stories. Tell me this. Is there an upside to it? I mean, writing about UFOs online in your blog, does it help you or hurt your career otherwise? Or do you know?
George, let me ask you this. Have you figured out a way to monetize this sucker?
No, not really.
No. I have not seen any kind of an upside, actually. And I'm not trying to be poor-mouthing or anything. But, you know, it certainly doesn't even get you a cup of coffee anywhere, because I don't discuss this. I don't discuss this with anybody at work unless they ask. And it's
Go ahead.
It's sort of subterranean, you know.
Some of what you write about is pretty advanced, I think. It's almost inside baseball. You got to know at least some of the basics before you would understand it or appreciate it, I think. Do you worry you're writing above your readers' heads, or do you know who your readers are?
No. I think I get a lot of crazy people. I get a lot of fanatics on both sides. I think generally I have really good, smart readers, but you do get the fringes on both sides, the zealots. I don't think I get a whole lot of new readers. I'm just trying to be honest here. I don't think I've made a whit of difference. On the other hand, George, I would think in your community, being so unique out there in Vegas, wouldn't you say that you have been able to create more of a tolerant consciousness out there given where you're located?
Yeah, I think so. After being at it for about 25 years, pounding away at it, that at least people can talk about it, Area 51, things of that sort. And I think there is a level of interest in Las Vegas that probably wouldn't exist otherwise. So in that sense, we've moved the needle a little bit. I know I've irritated the military to no end, and I know we've caused a lot of problems out there at Area 51 just because of the tens of thousands of people who've gone out there to see whatever it is that's flying around since the stories first came out. So you wrote about Area 51 when the CIA, I think this ridiculous report that came out explaining, oh yeah, all those things you've been seeing in the sky, all that stuff about Area 51, that was the U-2. That's what people have been seeing. I think it was the Associated Press that put out this ridiculous, it might as well have been a news release, but you responded to it with great sarcasm. You remember that one?
I do, because I actually knew Colonel Bill Coleman. Do you remember that name?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. In fact, we were almost neighbors over in Indian Harbor Beach. I lived just
From
a
Blue
couple
Book,
blocks
right? The guy
away
from Blue Book?
from Blue Book, right? And who went on to do Project UFO or be the consultant on NBC. And he put me in touch when I informed him of this. This is a few years ago. He also put me in touch with Bob Friend, who was his superior at Blue Book. Bill was kind of the public relations guy. And anyway, Friend was going, "Are you serious? All or most of the UFO sightings in during that time frame, they're saying it was the U-2 or the Blackbird? No, no way." And Coleman said, "Well, how would you see these things? They were flying so high, you know, their altitude was what, 60,000 feet or something like that." And he's going, "We may have had a few reports, but to blame, you know, the spy planes for UFO reports," he said, "that's utterly ridiculous." I said, "Anybody ever talk to you about it?" And he said, "No, nobody consulted with me. It sounds like it's just an arbitrary thing." And you know, I talked to Mark Rodiger up there with QFOs, and he said, "I don't think I can find any UFO reports that were actually explained in terms of SR-71 or U-2." I mean, as you say, it's absurd, and yet this kind of tripe gets parroted by New York Times, Washington Post, and you know, well, case solved. It
It's
makes you want to tear
ridiculous.
your hair out.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Bruce Maccabee, who's my guest in the next hour, had done some really serious work in this regard, and he documents that it's preposterous in the extreme to blame that. But of course, the people who put this stuff out know that people in our line of work will go ahead and parrot it because it's easier to do it that way. You wrote about it though, and it was just blistering. You said you criticized this reporter who said that these recently declassified documents have the tinfoil hat contingent abuzz on the internet, as if it's a great big party going on somewhere. And so some of the phrases that you used were pretty funny. You remember that column?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you had an AP reporter who was making some pretty broad statements about the UFO buffs are cheering, or you know, they were heartened or whatever. Well, as a journalist, or even as just a reader, well, you're setting me up for a you're giving me a scene setter. Now, you're telling people are celebrating, so take me to a party. You know, if you're going to make a statement like that, you know, that they're all rejoicing at the conference, well, then take me there. And it's just, you know, one of these broad, arbitrary bromides that these people uncork out of the cliche bottle, and they put it out there, and there's not an editor anywhere in sight going, "Hey, wait a minute, that's unsubstantiated, that's unreported," because it's only UFOs. I mean, who are you going to offend anyway if you take a little creative license?
You had another quote in there from Jeffrey Richardson, a senior fellow at the National Security Archive, which puts out a lot of really good stuff to media folks all over. And he said, "This marks an end of official secrecy about the facts of Area 51," which is total nonsense. I'll tell you what, try to go to Area 51 and see if the secrecy has ended. If you try to enter that right now, you get shot or arrested.
But George, your reporting, so far as I can tell, on Area 51 has been very fair, and I think you raised the questions that all taxpayers raise. You know, I mean, we've got what, a $60 billion black budget, $60 billion of really unaccounted for money. I mean, we don't even know how much they spend at Fort Meade to trim the hedges or mow the grass, you know? And I think your reporting is probably nettlesome, I should say, nettlesome somewhat. But I'll bet you've got a lot of people who actually work out there who are quietly cheering you on.
Well, that's what I've been told, and I've got more than 24 people I've talked to over the years out there about saucers and who've given me bits and pieces of information. But we're not talking about me. Let's talk about stuff that you're writing about. The Stephenville example that you raised before the break, I think, is a good one. You know, there's an idea even among sophisticated UFO aficionados that the big cover-up, the big era of ufology was the 50s, maybe the 60s, and there's not a whole lot, heck of a lot going on now. The cover-up doesn't have to continue. But Stephenville pointed out that it is alive and well. And the example you made is that, as you were talking about, the radar returns, the radar information that, and the lies that were told by the Air Force, that this is recent, this is new, this is, I mean, not exactly new, but pretty recent, and it's a very clear example of how they treat this subject, right?
Yeah, and I thought it was tremendously exciting, because this is the first time that they actually, again, we'll say MUFON, caught the Air Force with its pants pulled around its ankles. You know, I mean, they just flat out got them. And, you know, why did the National Weather Service, why did the FAA, why did they cooperate with the FOIA request? And why did the military not do that? Oh, we routinely destroy them. You know, no, I can't believe that, because you had what appeared to be a threat to national security insofar as you had something going towards the president's home in Midland, Texas. That's not something our government and many different acronyms of our government takes lightly. I went back and over the Bush years and found at least three cases, whether it was the White House or the Midlands Ranch, where private aircraft, either through ignorance or just stupidity, ventured into the no-fly zone. I mean, they had jet fighters right out there on them, forcing them down. And, you know, you had multiple agencies, local law enforcement, Secret Service, military, grilling these guys, these pilots. I mean, this is something that's taken extremely seriously. And I couldn't even get out of Carswell. I guess it's operational, I suppose, I understand it. I couldn't even get a confirmation out of Carswell Air Force Base, or whatever the right acronym is for it, up near Fort Worth, that they were responsible even for, you know, patrolling the skies over the Bush Ranch. I mean, I guess that's a classified thing, but I thought it was so bizarre that as this thing was right on the edge of the 10-mile no-fly zone around the Bush Ranch, that there wasn't a jet fighter anywhere in the area. And you had this thing without a transponder. And this is post 9/11. You know, you scratch your head. And
yeah, it's just not believable. Yeah.
No, it's not believable. And I think that's truly an exciting case. And, you know, I've been pumping this thing, and you know, you get no traction at all.
You've gave me the impression that you don't, and I know you don't go out in the field, you're not doing landing site trace cases, and you're not analyzing video, but it sounds like you're doing some actual reporting. I mean, you're calling up the military and trying to get answers on this stuff. So you do chase down leads, and you're doing some UFO detective work.
Well, only from the phone. I really don't have a budget to go out there, and I make a FOIA request every now and then, not very often, and it's a little frustrating, but on the other hand, it maybe is my salvation. You know, don't give Billy a budget or we'll never see him again.
I can relate to that.
So yeah, I mean, I try, basically what I do, George, is I sort of live off the reporting of other people, and if there is something that I think I might have a shot at getting, then I'll try to do that. Otherwise, I sit back and quote unquote analyze. It's a lot easier that
way. Well, let me pick your
especially
brain.
When you don't have a budget.
Let me pick your brain and instant analysis here. A week or so ago, NASA held this big symposium to discuss ET life, under the premise that Boy, any day now this could happen. We could get confirmation out there, so we better be prepared for it. And yet, while the basic subject is the discovery of ET life and how we should prepare for it, they were overtly, openly hostile to a discussion about UFOs. Lee Spiegel, one of our colleagues, was there, was covering it, and they don't want to talk about UFOs, but they want to talk about ETs. I mean, it's just a little bit ridiculous, almost as ridiculous as some of the stuff we're talking about. What's your take?
Yeah, it's cognitive dissonance, you know, especially, and the guy who I find really interesting is Stephen Dick, who is the erstwhile NASA historian, who, with a lot of early SETI theoreticians, proposed the idea that perhaps a distant advanced civilization could be coming up with the artificial intelligence robotics capable of reproducing and improving upon themselves while in flight, in transit. He called them post-biologicals. And of course, our galaxy is so old, I think there were some mathematicians fairly recently who came up with the math saying, you know what, if there was this sort of post-biological civilization, they could have easily canvassed our own Earth, you know, and gone back the distance, the length of the galaxy, you know, in the billions of years that they've been around without even violating the speed of light, you know, which is the tyranny we all kind of live under right now, theoretically anyhow. And so, you know, my question to him was, this is several years ago, well, if this is a theory that you're excited about or think could be, you know, credible, couldn't UFOs be representative or emblematic of these hypothetical post-biological artifacts? And, you know, UFOs, he goes, well, you know, my impression is the Air Force resolved that question back in 1969. What? Oh, well, then how do you even put your theory to the test if you don't have the conviction to consider UFOs as perhaps a reflection of your own hypothesis? I don't get it. I don't get it.
I think in that world, it's even more poisonous to talk about it or take it seriously than in our world, in our profession. You mentioned in one of your columns, I think it was back in 2008, which it's a hilarious column, a compendium about all the crazy stuff that happened UFO-wise that year. Was it the worst UFO media year ever? And you mentioned about this Cato Institute. I don't know if you remember one, but they had a guy who, a scholar of theirs, an adjunct scholar, an economics professor, who was terminated because he dared to write about this, right?
Yeah, this is Dom Armentano. Dom, he's a great guy. His he was a professor, and is still, I guess, Professor Emeritus of Economics at University of Hartford. And basically, he wrote a column about UFO disclosure, or transparency, rather, as an op-ed piece in the News Press, I think it is, Vero Beach. He did not mention anything about Cato, where he's been affiliated as a libertarian for a number of years. And immediately after that, he was terminated by David Bowes, who at the time, and he may still be the leader of the Cato Institute, you know. And Bowes wrote to him saying, because, I mean, Armentano didn't see the thing coming. I mean, you know, he just wrote what he thought was a fairly innocuous and, you know, certainly an approvable sort of column for more government transparency. That's what libertarians are all about, right?
Yep.
David Bowes wrote back, I won't deny that this latest op-ed played a role in our decision. Someday we may look back and wish we listened to you, but for now, this strikes us as not an issue that we want to have as part of Cato's research agenda. Now, If you look in the dictionary, Webster's, it defines, one of the definitions for libertarian is full individual freedom of thought, expression, and action. So, you know, either you have it or you don't. And the Cato people, based on my reading of this, they're a bunch of phonies.
Yeah, this guy was not writing that space aliens are here to steal our women or our frogs. He was just saying whatever files exist should be open to the public, which is hardly revolutionary.
He's a very thoughtful guy. And, you know, no, he wasn't making crazy claims. He just is what libertarians typically, and I think most Americans also, he wanted some accountability.
Billy Cox, keep fighting the good fight. I certainly will look forward to reading your stuff, and hope people will check out the DeVoid column. We have a link on the website. Glad you were here, and I plan to have you back.
George, thank you so much. I'm flattered. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, we'll talk again. Coming up, we delve a little bit further, jump a little bit further down the rabbit hole that Billy Cox is talking about with my next guest, Dr. Bruce Maccabee, taking a look at the real X-Files, the FBI UFO connection. Stay with us.